All right, here we go on a Friday. Yes. My birthday's right around the corner. John Curley, Sherry Elliker Show. Starring Sherry Elliker and Anthony Newley. Wow. Anthony Newley? Sherry? Sherry?
Anthony Newley, he's a little dead.
He's there. There you go. Too bad. Before he died, I wanted to get him on the phone to talk to my brother because I told a story. I was dating this girl, and she was in this place called Stop the World, I Want to Get Off, toured all around the United States with him. And Anthony Newley, I used to fly into different cities to go see her, and I was in the limo. Anthony Newley was in the back seat, and I said something funny, and then Anthony Newley said, "Funny stuff coming from the front seat." And I said that, and my brother said, "Anthony Newley never said that." I said, "Yes, he did." I said, "What did you say that was so funny?" I said, "I don't remember, Chuck. I was saying many funny things." But Anthony Newley said, "There's some funny stuff coming from the front seat." Chuck said, "No, no, no."
Didn't he say, like, bippity boppity boop or something like that? I mean, he's
like, and a big mountain out of a little hill. Gonna take a mountain out of a little hill. What kind of fool am I? Never said a lie. Yeah, like that.
Yeah, it's just, oh, how's boy. How did you play that song, like the recording right then and there with him singing? It was crazy.
Andrew did that. Andrew hit the button again. What kind of fool am I who never fell in love? Thank you, Andrew.
Hauntingly beautiful, really.
Thank you.
He is something else.
Treasure, we lost him.
Yes.
I don't think we lost him to smoking, though. Mandated lower tar, nicotine, and lower nicotine cigarettes could make smoking more dangerous, of course. This is the federal government coming in there with a boneheaded idea to reduce the amount of nicotine in cigarettes. Here's the problem. The study that they did, and even the federal government knows this, that people cheated and smoked other cigarettes. So if you're smoking a cigarette because you want the hit of the nicotine, which because that's the thing that you want to get, when they lower it, will you smoke more cigarettes or less cigarettes? Imagine if you're drinking a beer, like if you ever go to Salt Lake and they have like 2-3 beers, some crappy, really, you know, there's no alcohol in it. So people drink more of it. You drink the beer, no one, you know, like, I don't get a buzz. Oh, yeah, that's because here in Salt Lake, we have, like, you know, less alcohol in the beer. Then you order another one, and pretty soon you got 4 of them lined up in front of you. Because you're not drinking it for the taste. You're drinking it for the effect, right?
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So the same thing with cigarettes. You take the nicotine down, and then your people will just smoke more. But this is their idea. They want to come in there and try to stop people from getting addicted. It works if you get a new smoker who doesn't get addicted to the nicotine, they'd be less likely to become addicted. It's a fairly addicted drug, nicotine is. But it's a boneheaded idea by the government.
They also point out that this could be an opening for the black market, where people would try to buy, you know, full strength nicotine cigarettes, you know, from other countries or, you know, someplace else. And that opens up a whole other can of worms.
Mm. With your cigarettes, you get a can of worms. I remember talking to a friend of mine. He's from the Netherlands and he's smoking away like a chimney. And in the pack of cigarettes there from Europe, and that's a picture of some guy with a, you know, a trach tube laying there in bed. Mm. He looks like death warmed over. And I said, "Dave, does this bother you?" And he went, "No." I said, "But the guy's right there on the, I don't know. I don't know who that is." It didn't bother him because he didn't know the guy.
Never met him. Never Can't met feel him. Bad for him.
Sorry. Better you than me. But that's what they plan on doing. By the way, it's the other interesting thing is they're going to do this. Make it illegal, but they never say how many years in prison will you go in for selling cigarettes that have a normal amount of nicotine or black market. They don't talk to you about that little move as well.
And how can they? I mean, when there have been so many things that have been decriminalized, do you really think they're going to waste time, paperwork, or any type of, you know, prison time for people selling cigarettes? Just not going to happen. This is not enforceable. That's the other thing.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of nicotine. I like that drug.
Well, you know, Edgar Cayce, I don't know if you know who he is. Edgar Cayce was like a paranormal kind of guy. Yeah. And he believed that if you smoked one cigarette a day, that provided your body with enough poison to keep it fighting, that it was actually good for you to have one cigarette a day.
Okay. No, I don't smoke, but I do like nicotine gum.
So you don't worry at all about the nicotine being, you know, a carcinogenic or anything?
No, nicotine is not a carcinogenic. It's all the horrible chemicals they stick in the tobacco, right, to make it burn correctly, to preserve it, to all the other stuff. No, the nicotine is just like caffeine, and your body absorbs it like caffeine. It's a little stronger, a little bit more addictive than caffeine. It's very similar anyway. Gives you a little shot of dopamine, increases heart rate, alertness, things like that. So if I ride my motorcycle, I take a little piece of gum. It's got 4 milligrams of caffeine or nicotine in it, and I pop that in.
So. Have you ever done the patch? That would give you probably a bigger rush.
No. I want fresh breath and alertness.
It seems like an oxymoron, you know, like
What's that?
You get fresh breath from nicotine gum, but you know, I guess it's spearmint or peppermint or something, right?
Yes, it is. No, it's tobacco flavored. It's called white ash, and it's the taste of an ashtray. Come on.
Okay, I've never tried it.
What kind of fool am I? Andrew, I can still hear that in the background. I don't know if that's coming through on your headset as well.
Sorry, I'm losing track of all my pots here. I gotta track it down.
Yeah, turn it down, would you? There's a story. Crosscut talks about these families upset that the free money coming from the government that has caused inflation will be stopping. They profile a woman that she has, 5 kids, and she says now it's really hard to make ends meet because they're going to start to reduce the freebies that we've been handing out to everybody.
Right. Part of the American Rescue Plan, John, is they had child tax credits. So it was $300 per child under 6 and $250 for older children. So that took place part of last year, and they say that this was a real safety net for families. It lifted a lot of kids out of poverty. There's something in Washington that passed that's similar to that. It's called the Working Families Tax Exemption, and those are yearly payments between $300 and $1,200 to families that need it. So they think that might help out some of the people that now have lost this child tax credit.
Right. Well, listen, yeah, they were patting themselves on the back that they had reduced poverty, because what they did is they printed a bunch of money and gave a bunch of money to everybody, and it brought everybody up. Okay, you're going to give somebody $300 per kid, plus you're also going to give, I think it was $1,700 per person once a month. I mean, the amount of money they were just sending out there, and then you get reduced Medicaid, Medicare stuff. They gave you, didn't have to pay your rent, they give you more for SNAP, and the money just kept coming and coming. You get a big pile of money. Well, okay, you're temporarily richer. You deflated the value of the dollar, and now, 2 years later, you go and buy something. Well, now you're really paying for it, aren't you? They gave you the money. It was free. And now when you go to the store to buy food, now food's more expensive. Why? Because someone has to pay the bill. In the great words of Milton Friedman, what did Milton Friedman say, Sherry?
He said the problem with...
Socialism, eventually,
you run out of other people's money. No, what did he say?
That was Margaret Thatcher.
Okay.
There's no such thing
as corporate taxes.
Ooh, this is historical.
Yes. There's no such thing as a free lunch.
It's a free lunch. Okay.
And this is a perfect example of it. So they're profiling this woman who's gotten all this money from the state, and now she's having a harder time making things meet. Absolutely. This is one of the reasons the governor doesn't want to turn off the emergency that we have in the state of Washington, because it means turning off the spigots. So in effect, what you have is Governor Inslee stealing from your child, your children's future, because he's taking money from the government and handing it out to people as a form of power and control, but someone has to pay the bill. And the person that will be paying the bill is the next generation and this generation as well, because someone eventually needs to pay the price.
Now, speaking of free lunches, I want to know what you think about this, because there's this woman named April Berg. She's from Mill Creek. She's on the school board. And during the pandemic, I didn't know this, everybody got free lunches at school.
Mm-hmm.
The free lunch program was expanded. That's about to end. So it's going to be about, you know, 40% more or whatever now. It's clearly not going to include everybody. And she's saying she thinks to have free lunches for everybody makes a lot of sense. It's that way kids that are on kind of the edge there that may not have enough money for lunches, or there's no fumbling with money or, you know, e-cards or anything like that. What do you think of that?
Well, what does Milton Friedman say about a free lunch?
There is no such thing.
There is no such thing as a free lunch. So for this elected official in Mill Creek, and Mill Creek, by the way, the average household income is $121,000 or $128,000. That's your annual income. You have 4% of the people that live in Mill Creek are below the poverty line. So let me ask you this. Why should someone who is, say, making $100,000 have free lunch? And again, there's no such thing as it. It is being paid for by everybody else. And when it is free, people tend not to really care much about it. So if you go through the cafeteria line and somebody slaps some hamburger, whatever, it's not your father's money, your mother's money that paid for that. It's nobody's money. And you just eat a couple of bites and throw it in the garbage. And you don't care. You don't tell your mom. Your mom doesn't say, hey, would you get a new ham and cheese? I remember one time saying to my mom, gosh, I think I really like deviled ham. She goes, no, you don't. And I said, yeah, I do. I like the can. I think I really like deviled ham. And she got this cans of deviled ham that looked like tuna fish. And she made me this sandwich. And I remember going, oh my God. I came home. My mom goes, what did you get the deviled ham sandwich? Oh God. I like the can. I think I should have eaten the can like a goat. She got immediate feedback because she was paying for it and I was throwing it out. But this person, this elected official in Mill Creek, wants who to pay for the free lunch?
Well, we would pay for the free lunch.
Why?
We would pay
and
for everybody's
lunch. Why am I paying, if you're making $120,000 a year, why am I paying for your kids' lunch?
I guess because it would streamline the process. Kids wouldn't have to think about it. They wouldn't have to go to school with a packed lunch or without lunch, no matter, you know, even if they're making enough money, they may be neglected in terms of food. So therefore, they would be able to go in, get in line, get their lunch and be done with it.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like such a burden having to feed the children that you created.
Well, there are people out there who are not always doing the best job.
I understand. And the state stepping in, here's the problem with the free lunch thing. They don't monitor it. And here's the other part. When a school has free and reduced lunch, if the number is high, they can go back to the federal government and say, give us more money. And the money is not spent in the cafeteria. The money is federal dollars that go into the school budget. So the school likes to see that number nice and high. That's why they don't audit it. So if you have 100 kids standing in line, and if you audited and found out what the income was for those 100 kids, this is prior to the handing out free lunches to everybody, if you audited those kids, you would find out that a small percentage of them need it, the rest are taking advantage of it, and the school gets the benefit by jacking up their free and reduced lunch numbers so that they can go to the federal government, look how poor all of our students are, you need to give us more money. So it's the incentive to be deceptive in order to be able to fill your coffers. And who pays? We pay. But don't forget, it's free.
No such thing.
No. No, and that there's something, and oh, but what about the embarrassment for the child that can't, that has to stand in line and then say this or say that, please. Then make it simpler. I remember one time my grandfather went to testify in Harrisburg, because they were passing this law down there, and one of the reasons they wanted to hand out cards to people at the supermarket, and in Pennsylvania, you could give the person the card, and then you'd be able to get a deduction on what you're paying at the grocery store. This is some program they had come up with. And then the people in Pennsylvania said, the card is too embarrassing for the person. And my grandfather went down to testify, as my father said later on, to say, you know what? You hand the card in, there should be some shame and humiliation.
Well,
and he also testified on unemployment. He said, don't allow the state to take the money out of everybody's paycheck and send it to somebody. You give every single one of these people that wants unemployment 7 homes that they must go to. and knock on the door, come into the house, and then the person goes, okay, well, hold on there, Gary. I'm going to get your, where's that money? Where do I keep the, oh, yeah, I have a jar here that I keep the extra cash in. Let me get that for you. Now, how much money did you say that I was supposed to pay you this week? And he goes, and as the person stands there in the kitchen and counts out the money and puts it into the open hand of the individual, he said, that person will probably not be coming back again and will go out and look for a job.
And what year was this?
It was 1902.
Well,
no, it was probably 1965. Early 70s, or I'd say yeah. Early 70s,
okay. Yeah. Well, I think and your grandfather
one last
would
thing,
be,
grandfather story. 4th of July, fire trucks would throw candy out to the kids. Caramels and other candies were popular. The little red and white minty things were not popular, right? Mm-hmm. So then my grandfather would, with the firemen, walk down Bala Avenue and pick up all the candy that was left behind by the kids and would throw it at them the next year.
Oh, so they'd recycle them?
Yes.
That's okay. I mean, if he was willing to do the work, that's fine. I think
we're not going to waste it. So, but imagine a mint that's been thrown from a fire truck, hits the ground, and it shatters into that like sharp, broken pieces.
Okay. You mean like a peppermint? Like a peppermint.
Yeah, pick back up again, put in a box, and then thrown at you another year. But what now, as it comes at you, it's about a million pieces of sharp peppermint.
And maybe wouldn't a solution have been, let's switch candies so we don't waste all of it?
That could be a possibility, but there's always somebody on the committee that's really into peppermints. You know how that goes.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean by that, Felix?
Ooh, this is historical.
That's right. Okay. Did we cover any news there?
A little bit.
I think I need another piece of nicotine gum. What do you think about that, Dory?
Oh, I love the birds.
All right. She wasn't talking about birds. All right, Bucky's Auto Service Centers. You know they've got 16 locations. You know that already. And they've been around for 52 years. I don't know why anybody would take their car anywhere else other than to Bucky's Auto Service Centers. I saw this story yesterday. Such a mess. I didn't even do the show yesterday, and I was sending stuff to Jacob and to you, and I was just sitting there firing this stuff off. Couldn't get away from it. Kept thinking, even though I'm not there, I just can't stop. Do you notice that, Cherry, you take the day off? Do you, like, not read the news?
Oh, no. I keep... No. I really keep reading it. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't on yesterday because I had a technical problem, and I couldn't get any... Internet, anything. My internet was completely down and I felt like I was disconnected from the whole world. I mean, and I was, but it's kind of scary how much we depend on it, right?
I found this story and I sent it to you and Jacob and I wrote, I will feast on this tomorrow. Please get me a plastic bib so I don't spill anything on myself.
Feast away.
So here's the breakdown of how we get to know the stuff we know. There is the world. Then there is the data that comes from the world. Then there is the analysis of the data. That's a published paper. Then there is the institutional knowledge that comes from those published papers. Then it goes to popular media. That would be us.
Mm-hmm.
News and books. And then it becomes what is known as common knowledge. If you imagine that kind of coming across little slide. So again, it's the world. Then you get the data from the world. Then you analyze it. Then you have the institutional knowledge. And then you get the popular media telling you what it is. And then you get what is known as common knowledge. So this guy was analyzing that and he happened to see that there was a slide that was presented by the CDC, which is the Center of Disinformation Center. And what they did was they put this slide up and you have all these experts sitting there. About 22 people were in this meeting and it was the CDC was releasing this information to advocate for people, for kids 5 to 14 or something like that, getting the experimental vaccine. And up comes the slide and no one notices, but it says that they're comparing pediatric death falling down, accidents, drowning, suffocation, getting a hot dog lodged in the throat. So they took the pediatric death in that age group of 1 year. But then the number what they used when it came to pediatric, so they're comparing the number of kids that die from, let's say, accidents, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was 1 year. But then they have also, they put the other one in there is from COVID. But the number they put in there is from March 2020 to April 2022. So they basically got a bigger data point comparing it to a smaller data point. So one of them expanded over more months and the other one was just 12 months. But no one looking at the thing said, that's not an apples to apples comparison because you're, it looks like you've extended the COVID. You're putting in more months. So of course that number is going to be higher than the other ones. They all sat there. No one said anything. And then the CDC put that tweet out and other people tweeted it out. Epidemiologists were there. Oh no, look at all the number of kids that are dying of COVID. Then when somebody asked them about it and then said, can you be more specific as to were there any comorbidity in other, they didn't give that information. So I was talking to an individual yesterday. I won't say his name on the air because he's a fairly public person, and I showed it to him and he said, yeah. I said, now was this a mistake? Or is this malicious misinformation in order to prove and push a point? And I would hope it was just somebody stuck a slide in there and choose. But did they put the one number in there to be able to create more panic and anxiety? And did they move those numbers up so that they got the results they wanted, which was they want the common knowledge of the public to feel as if more kids are dying of COVID than other things, because they moved it up to now it's the fourth leading cause of death for kids 5 to 14 or 5 to 19. That's the other thing. They moved the numbers from 5 to 18 to 5 to 19 to include more. So here's the question to you, Sherry. Is it intentionally done, do you believe? Do you think most people would think it's intentionally done, or do you think it's most people like, oh, it's just that's a number that they put in there and that's important that we get this common knowledge?
Well, I think the old saying, nothing lies like a statistic, kind of enters in here. You can massage the data any way you want to get the results that you want sometimes. So I think that there's some of that. I think as far as people not noticing, I think people make these assumptions, and he points this out, that we just take it for granted that these so-called experts are experts, right? Why would we challenge that? What do we have to back it up? Or even other medical experts, what do they have then to challenge that if the assumption is that the CDC is mining through all of this data and all of these numbers? And they must, I mean, they wouldn't deliberately lie to us, would they? So I think that they probably need to continue to scare people and need to continue to make COVID the big bad wolf. So is it an outright lie? No, I'm sure they can back this up with whatever they've got and whatever they use to come up with this. But is it misleading? Absolutely.
Yes. When I had called a number of times the Washington State Department of Health and written to them a number of times, just asking them, the person that is in the hospital, your COVID numbers are quote unquote surging. Is the person in because of COVID, or are they in because they've got a broken leg or they have appendicitis and they got tested? Is that included in your number? Give us the real number. As they used to say at IBM, garbage in, garbage out. The thing that concerns me and troubles me is when they're not giving us and that chain that I talked about before from the world and then the data and then the analysis and then the institutional knowledge, then the popular media, and then the common knowledge. I used to rail when Tom and I were on the air. We'd come out of a CBS update and they would talk about these percentages. And I'm just screaming and people get mad at me. Why are they doing it? They're doing it because they need you to react a particular way, because they need an outcome, which is you to be afraid. And I do believe this. A lot of this is tied into driving these numbers up so that people are afraid. because once you have somebody in the state of fear, it's much easier to get them to do the things you need to get them to do. And I don't know whether I would hope at some point in the next couple of years, somebody digs into this stuff and sees, here's the number, here's this, here's why these numbers came out. Ultimately, who is benefiting from that? Does it benefit Big Pharma? Is it Big Pharma that's benefiting from these numbers? Is it the politician that's benefiting from these numbers? Is it, what is driving the CDC to either intentionally manipulate that number or to be so sloppy that they put that number in there and the 22 quote unquote experts sitting looking at the slide never go, wait a minute, you're looking from March 2020 to April 2022. You've got a whole 2 years in there comparing that to a 1 year. That doesn't work. Are they part of the problem, or did they do this intentionally to make us all afraid?
Well, I think they definitely do it to make us afraid. As far as the people watching, we can't underestimate a level of intellectual laziness, too. They may not want to dig into it because that's work, and who's going to believe them? And that's not what the media is selling either. So it's all part of the, I think all of those things are factors. I think the politicians, the media, everything is part of it. And you know, look what happens to outliers. Look what happens when someone goes against that and says, no, wait a minute, that's just not accurate. That's not real. Yeah. We've done it before.
When the tobacco industry was intentionally misleading us and holding back information, they had the studies, they knew about the cancer, they knew about this, and they intentionally did not tell us. They held it back, and finally they brought those guys in there, and they said, look, your own studies told you, but you didn't give us the real numbers. You manipulated this in order to benefit your shareholders so you could sell more tobacco to people. You did it. And they called them in and got them, and they zapped them all, and they get the money. I would hope that someday we get Dr. Fauci to sit there and explain, okay, so the money wasn't directly given to the lab, but you gave it to your buddy, Dr. Peter, and then he came around, and then the money went to the lab in order for gain-of-function research to occur so that we could move from the bat to the human being. I just want someone to be held accountable. Or maybe they do an investigation and find that that didn't happen. I just want someone just to answer the question. Because the damage we are seeing to children, to our economy, and to the world, it can be directly reflected back to a group of people that decided it was important for us to all be in a state of fear. And the numbers, I just don't believe them. And I see that. That's an example of either they let it go by or they wanted to manipulate for a particular purpose. I want to see Dr. Fauci sit there and answer those questions.
Yeah, and it's going to take somebody like Rand Paul to keep hammering away at him.
It's not going to happen. It's got to be somebody else. No, it can't be Rand Paul because there's too much. It has to be somebody else. All right, here we go. Matt filling in for Jacob. Is anybody even writing on a Friday, beautiful day like this? Are they listening to the John Curley, Sherry Elicker show? Are you, Matt?
Hmm? It's a little slow. I still need a great letter of the day. Putting that out there.
I have to write my own. You can write to us at mynorthwest.com. And come on in through the state roofing text line, 1-888-973-5476. And all are welcome. Sherry's going to hop on a plane and fly here soon. She's going to be coming in doing the show from the Big Cairo Radio Studios. We look forward to seeing you there in front of the camera.
I can't wait. I leave on Sunday. I'll be there Monday morning, ready to go.
There was a scary story about a woman who was rescued from a hostage situation from a Grubhub person.
Right.
Surveillance video from inside the Chipper Truck Cafe. Employees get a food order via Grubhub for an Irish breakfast sandwich, a hamburger, and something else. A plea for help from a...
Wait, I got Barry the lead. What's an Irish breakfast sandwich?
I don't know, but the lady, she's got a great...
Is that a potato and six-pack of beer?
she's got a great Irish accent. Wait till you hear.
A woman being held against her will by a man she met online, identified by police as Kamoy Royal. She placed the food order via Grubhub, and under special instructions, the message read in part, Please call the police. Please don't make it obvious. Owner Alice Bernejo says she always reminds her employees to read the entire order.
They know, check it, make sure and check it before all goes into the bag. And thankfully, that's what saves the girl.
Employees called NYPD. Police responded to this home on Pratt Avenue in the Bronx. Royal answered the door thinking the food was arriving, but instead it was police who arrested him.
They were in that situation. This is something that they can do, and this can help them.
Wow. Did the guy ask where his Irish breakfast was when the police were taking him away?
No, but he was arrested on charges of rape, strangulation, criminal sex act, unlawful imprisonment, menacing, assault, criminal possession of a weapon, and sexual abuse.
Oh, God.
I found an example of an Irish breakfast sandwich. Do you want to know what's in it?
Yes, please.
Okay, so we got rye bread, and we got scrambled eggs, Irish cheddar cheese, or I guess just cheddar cheese, Irish banger sausages, and bacon.
Hmm. Thank you. You know, Andrew, we were just talking about the horrible assault against this woman, and Sherry had listed all of the atrocities.
Yes.
And then you come in with a bunch of ingredients. So, well timed.
I'm trying to leaven the mood with some food.
Save that on yourself, please.
Well, once I said that, I realized that was a good. I was going to pull that.
Okay.
Okay. She's safe, and he's arrested, and we know what an Irish breakfast sandwich is. So. All is right with the world.
Thank you. Okay. Wow. Short but powerful segment there.
Indeed.
That was on you, Matt. I don't know if you know about the book, but Andrew's going to write you down in the book. I know you're just sort of filling in. So
we got our first entry for Matt in the book, it looks like.
Here we are. Put him in.
Number one so far.
Well, we don't really celebrate being in the book. Put Matt down.
I have to celebrate something, John. My life is fairly empty.
For third time for not understanding the severity of being in the book.
Three and one.
Three and
wow.
One day. See,
wow,
that's great.
Put him in again.
It's four.
He doesn't get it. Then go over and
I'll take fame any way I can get it, John.
All right, fine.